America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We are back. It's Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. It's the usual suspects. It's Dan Canobio, and it's the champ, Chris Algieri. We're coming to you on Sunday morning after Ring 4 and a phenomenal night of fights, top to bottom. We will recap it in length, at length, ad nauseum, like we always do. This episode is brought to you by PPV.com. December 6th is the next big one in the boxing world down in San Antonio, Texas, when Lamont Roach takes on Pitbull Cruz. We got Janibek versus Lara, Oshaki Foster versus Stephen Fulton, a championship triple header. The main event could be elevated to a world title fight because Subrio Matias popped for PEDs, but that's not part of this read. PPV.com is the leader in streaming. We will be part of the live chat all week long. We'll be bringing you content from San Antonio, so make sure to order the fight with us at PPV.com. Keep it locked to our socials, their socials. We're going to do some giveaways, all that fun stuff, because we're getting close to that time. Chris, how are you, man? We got a lot to talk about today.
We do. Something completely off topic that we're not going to talk about that I want to just gloat a little bit about. Subrio Matias, I told you guys, I was never sold on this guy. Everybody was like, oh, he's the boogeyman, blah, blah, blah. All right, I'm just going to leave it at that.
I didn't plan on talking about it. We missed it last episode because we were so geared up for this fight card. Boxing has a PED problem. I tweeted it out. It's simple as that. Boxing has a PED problem, period. And Matias pops hot, and the guy has got an unbelievable motor and devastating power. How could this guy throw 90 punches around, never get tired? Osterine.
Well, he also killed a man in the ring. So let's not forget that. So yeah,
forgot about that.
So fuck this guy. Straight up, fuck this guy. Like, you literally killed a guy in the ring, and now you're using fucking PEDs? Get out of here. I mean,
crazy. Well, more of that will come out when we figure out who gets elevated. I think Puelo's going to get elevated, who's also tested positive for PEDs. But he tested further back, so the public may not remember as much.
I had this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine, Jake Benacci. He's a big strength coach. He worked with Randy Couture for a long time, Vitor Belfort, you know, amazing guys over there, myself included. And he was talking about how prevalent PEDs actually are, because he's talking to some doctors out there and some people who were in the know, so to speak. And he's like, Chris, he's like, you wouldn't believe how many guys are. I go, yeah, I do believe it, actually. I very much believe it, how many guys are. And how
you're the guy that's been actively talking about it in boxing media, where everyone else just kind of sweeps it under the rug.
So many people are like, oh, so everybody was on it but you? I'm like, I mean, not everyone but me, but yeah. Like, oh, you never did anything? Oh, yeah. No, I never did anything. Like,
I'll
no,
get I
never
that too. It'd be like Usyk or Inoue, Bud. And I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and name names. I don't know who's on it, but like, more likely than not, we're getting to a slippery slope here. It's a problem. It's a problem in the sport, and I think everyone kind of knows that right now. All right, let's get into the fights, and where do we even begin here? Four bangers, four really great performances. I guess we'll start with the one that we were correct on, dancing on graves right now. Wait a second. Before we even get into this, Chris, you're not going to bring up the fact that I was 4-for-4 last night?
I posted about it, buddy. I posted it. We name names here on our podcast. We stick to our picks, and sometimes we eat crow, and sometimes we gloat, and we can do both. You have the right to gloat today. You are 4-for-4. I was 2-for-2, but I'm giving you your praise and your grace and your flowers. Well done, Dan.
Yeah, baby. You're on the money, too. Like, I just happened to be 4-for-4. You had a great night. Like, you had two hits. I went 4-for-4. Perfectly fine. And this isn't about me. This isn't about me. It's about the great fighters out there. So many people I'd like to thank. I'd like to thank my dad for bringing me into this wonderful sport.
Thank the Academy.
The Academy. But, you know, last night I was in a flow state. Now, you guys get the flow states in the ring.
Mm.
I was in the flow state. I was firing off tweets. They were getting tons of interactions. My picks were hitting. My studio was all set up with a new camera, new lights. I had the fights on in the living room. I was running into the studio to record my post fights. Dude, I was like Tommy Hearns prime 85 firing off jabs.
The Long Island City Cobra.
Bayshore now. But the Bayshore,
Bayshore Cobra.
It was one of them nights. And it all culminated with Devin Haney. I know it wasn't the main event, but Devin Haney, UG's Brian Norman drops him in the second round. 116, 111, 117, 110. Mike Fitzgerald, what was you watching, homie? He had it 114, 113. I said after the fight, good performance, not great from Haney, because he did drop him. He did win. He did take away Norman's best attributes, which is the power shots, did drop him, which is, I think, the saving grace of this performance for Haney. But he was only 6 of 23 average in the fight. 6 landed, 23 punches thrown a fight. Let his foot off the gas in the second half of the fight. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, wow, Devin Haney becomes a 3-division world champion, quiets the naysayers. What a performance.
Yeah, I mean, quiets the naysayers and quiets all the idiots that were in our comments that hated our pick because we did both pick Devin Haney to win by decision. I thought he was going to outbox Brian Norman, and he certainly did. Was it the thrilling victory that, you know, that might be expected? No, but that's not how Devin Haney fights. These people who are like surprised that Devin Haney goes out there and puts on a boxing clinic, you know, he scores a knockdown. Be happy. You know, the fight wasn't boring. It was tactical. He didn't throw a lot of punches, but that's not really his style anymore, especially as he's going up in weight. This is his third division. Welterweight's a very dangerous division. Brian Norman's a very dangerous guy. Guess what? You throw less against guys like that. Devin threw less. He threw back-to-back dangerous guys. Ramirez is a very dangerous guy, too. Big left hook. Devin was coming off the Ryan Garcia fight, so he's very, very cautious. Overly so, I thought. But on Saturday, I don't think he was overly cautious with Brian Norman. Brian Norman's really dangerous, and he's the biggest guy that he's fought to date. So I think it was a good performance. I think he showed his skills. I thought that he looked very confident. He looked sturdy. He wasn't running. You know, he boxed. And, yeah, did he slow down the pace? Yes. Was that a good idea? Yes, actually, because it worked out really well.
He's just never going to win. I mean, he keeps winning. All he does is win.
Yeah.
All he does is win. He's now a 3-division world champion, and he's going to go to 147. He's going to take on what is the most feared fighter in the division at the time. It proved to be that Norman really wasn't that guy. And, you know, we never make it personal on this show when we do our predictions. Like, I have to take a step back and realize that our listeners and boxing fans out there, fans is short for fanatical, for fanatics. They are looking at the sport different than us. Me and you look at the sport. We're fans of the sport. And there are mm-hmm. some people out there that are fans of the sport as well. But there are some people out there that are fans of singular fighters. Like, I hate – not me. But there's people out there that say, I hate Devin Haney. They go as far as to call him a coward, go as far to bring up his religion, go as far as to bring up his personal life. And a lot of that seeps into some fans' analysis, and it never has shaped anything that I have done. So I have to – think about that sometimes, that fans are crazy and they look at other things that we look at. When it comes to Haney, they just never going to give the guy his credit. Like, he's never going to win. So he has to have this mentality of just like, screw everyone. I'm going to go in there and fight the fight that I want to fight. And like I said, good, not great. Like, 23 punches around, not great. But he was able to control Norman. He was able to stabilize Norman. He didn't run in there. There was a lot of clinching. But it wasn't just Haney that was in doing those clinching. Like, go back and watch the second half of that fight. Brian Norman was doing a lot of clinching. It was kind of an ugly fight down the stretch. But we got a no shit moment. Who the heck had Haney dropping Brian Norman in this fight? I didn't. I know you did. I got a lot right last night. Not that. I don't think anyone had that on their bingo card.
No, didn't see that coming. Brian Norman and great
point bringing up there, Dan, about how we feel about the fighters. I actually really like Brian Norman. I like him as a fighter. I like him from what he says, how he speaks. But my pick was my pick. My pick was because I watched boxing and I thought Devin Haney was going to win. Guess what? He did. Down the stretch, Brian looked out of his depth. He'd never been in with a world-class guy. He'd never been to the world elite level. And he got a bit of a lesson last night. Haney's been there. Haney's been 12. Listen, you go 12 with Lomachenko, that's like coming out with a PhD. And he put that on display. Did he have to throw a lot of punches? No, didn't matter. Haney goes out there and wins. He'll win by – it doesn't matter. He'll win every round by an inch. He doesn't care. He just goes and keeps winning. I like that about him. It's not the most exciting style, sure, but whatever. The guy wins. And Brian Norman looked befuddled. Down the stretch, he looked tired. He looked befuddled. He looked surprised. He was bleeding from the nose pretty much all night long from the super, super sharp jabs that Haney was flashing all night long. He got dropped early and maybe never really recovered from that, because we've talked about this on the show before. Sometimes you get hit and you just don't recover all night long. And you're basically treading water all night because of that. You're fighting like you feel like you're underwater. Brian looked like he had that a little bit. He had a little deer in headlights, which could have been from that shot, or it could have just been from the masterful boxing of Devin Haney. Who knows?
Yeah, the knockdown really was the exclamation point for Haney, or else I think he'd be getting even more criticism because it was somewhat of a dull performance. He did what he had to do to win, but you get the knockdown, and it's like, oh wow, like he dropped him. So like he had his power does carry at 147, or at least he has some pop in there. And a lot of naysayers with Haney, so he was called pillow fisted. He goes in and drops Brian Norman. They say all you do is run. He stood there for the most part and was willing to trade with Norman when there wasn't those moments of clinching, which also Norman was guilty of as well. Gets the win. That's what's the most important thing. Was it the best fight on the card? No, but I had it as the most shocking performance, because I thought Haney would win, obviously, but I thought there would be some moments, some trial by fire moments, some hold on to the edge of your seat. Brian Norman's coming on. He's going to nail Haney on the chin. Haney's going to catch him. Norman had some moments down the stretch, but to your point, yeah, like, you know, we broke it down in the last episode perfectly. Go back and listen. Like, the guy was fighting 8 rounders in 2023, and that's not really a knock. It's like, wow, look how far he's come in just 2.5 years or 1.5 years. He went from 8 rounders to a world title to fighting in Saudi Arabia for the biggest amount of money that he's ever fought for against Devin Haney. So I don't say that as a slight that he was, you know, limited or only fighting 8 rounders just a year ago. It's because, you know, the division is not that deep. He got a title. He played it pretty well, I thought, Norman, in terms of, you know, avoiding boots, because I think after watching last night, boots would have ran through Brian Norman even worse than Haney did. But yeah, so I think Norman will be back. He's only 23 years old. And I think, if anything, if you're going to lose like he did, like he also upped his profile big time. He did all these interviews and it seeped into the analysis of the fight. People were saying, oh, this guy's so confident and he's a breath of fresh air. He's the opposite of a lot of these divas that we're seeing in boxing these days. So I said, Brian Norm, keep your head up. Maybe bring in another trainer. Maybe bring in some help. Something about Devin Haney that I like, Chris, is that Devin will bring in other, you know, bring in a Mike McCallum at times, like bring in a Ben Davison, have his dad there. Like, he's a student of the game, Devin Haney. You got to – I know some people out there just can't stand him, but you got to give this guy credit. Always evolving. His will, too. That's something you talked about in the in our preview episode, is that he's been through everything. Like, the Ryan Garcia fight really was something that helped him get to where he is today. Constantly evolving, Devin Haney. And this was mental as much as it was physical win for Haney.
Yeah, no, I'm not a guy who knocks Haney, and I've been defending him for a long time. I think I've known him. I know him personally. That's part of it, too. So – all full disclosure, I've known him since he was probably 11 or 12 years old in Vegas. But the guy puts in the work when it comes to discipline and training and work, hard work. I always respect fighters like that. And Devin's one of those guys. And that's why he is ever evolving. You know, he's still young But he's on his third weight class already. And I'm not knocking him for his performance. He had a really dangerous guy. What do you do with a dangerous guy? You domesticate them, and you don't get into firefights. You don't get into exchanges. And he did just that. So everyone who's knocking him, you're literally just taking it personal. You just don't like him in terms of the performance. And even like Eddie Hearn saying, oh, it was boring. And you see Ben with his head on his shoulder. It's so annoying.
God.
Like, what do you, this is, okay, you're different kinds of fighters. You're different kinds of athletes. Not everyone's going to go out there and charge across the ring and throw bombs the way that Ben does. You know, Haney's not that kind of fighter. He's a stylist. And when you have a super dangerous guy in front of you, you subdue them. You subdue them by, it's like having, I think, dealing with a snake. Haney was like a snake charmer last night. And he had the cobra ready to strike, but he just couldn't get anything but air. So all in all, I think it was actually a good performance. I know you're knocking the performance. I don't. I think that's what you do with a puncher.
Not really knocking it. I was just like kind of grading it like how we should. Like we were to come on here and just say everything's great every episode. I mean, you want me to come on here and say Abdullah Mason was phenomenal and he did everything wonderful? Like, or do you want to hear real analysis or our real opinions? Like, I thought good, not great. Like, I would like to see him step on the gas a little more, but that's just not his game. Like, I think this is what we see of Devin Haney now is what we're going to get. He's not going to get into these wars. He's not going to get dragged into a war. It's actually quite impressive to watch him slow down a fight like this. Not for everyone, but you're going to tune in now because he's one of the biggest lightning rods in the sport. He's now a champion at welterweight. There's going to be some big fights for Devin Haney coming down. Like, Devin Haney could potentially fight Ryan Garcia in a rematch. If Ryan beats Barrios, then it's a unification bout, as if that fight couldn't be big enough. And then we have Conor Benn ringside. And that's another fight at 147, I think, that Conor wants. And I think that Eddie would want. And I think that could be very lucrative. And you're right. Like I have here in the notes, Hearn and Benn were insufferable. Because we talked about this for a while now on the podcast. Is how insufferable will Hearn be if Conor Benn beats Eubank? He's not like crazy, but I just didn't like Eddie. Immediately after the fight, they bring Eddie up on the stage. And he starts talking down Devin Haney. I understand they had a working relationship that I don't think obviously is not – he's not his promoter anymore. But it just kind of showed like how promoters move sometimes. While he was promoting Devin Haney, he's the best fighter on earth, Devin the Dream Haney, blah, blah, blah. And then the minute he's no longer with Matchroom, he's boring. He was a little too much, a little over the top in terms of calling him boring fighter and kind of – you don't have to do that. Number one – just rude. Number two, it takes away from the fight if Ben fights Haney. So you're saying like he's a boring fighter. So why would anyone want to watch your fighter, Conor Benn, fight a boring fighter? Well, you're going to charge us pay-per-view prices for it. So I thought twofold from Eddie that it was just silly. And usually Eddie's pretty good on the mic. I thought maybe he should have hyped up Devin a little bit.
Well, as good as we've been talking about Eddie Hearn as a promoter, he's only good at promoting his own fighters because you saw how personal he got because of that, because he doesn't have a working relationship with Devin anymore. Maybe they had a falling out regardless, but it's going back to the old Floyd Mayweather effect where he would talk up everybody that he was going to fight and talk them up after he beat them, because it's a very smart move. And to your point, like, you know, Eddie is talking Haney down. You're not helping sell that fight. Maybe he's looking at it like, oh, well, people want to see Ben, you know, wash Haney because so many people don't like Haney. Well, guess what? People don't like Ben either. So that's going to be the most hated matchup if it's ever made. Like, both guys are so hated.
Who's the less hated of the two?
I don't know, honestly.
I think it's Ben, because Ben will at least like give the impression that he's bringing the fight and fans want blood. Fans want red meat. They want blood. They want.
It probably is Ben, because Haney just, he can't win no matter what. It doesn't matter what he does.
And he shouldn't even try to win anymore.
No, I don't think he is. It doesn't bother him.
A while ago, he gave that up. I think a while ago, he's like, I'm going to play that heel. There should be more respect for him this morning after what he did, too. Another thing, too, from Ben, like, dude, you've won zero world titles. You had a drug suspension, and you're up there talking down on a guy that just won his third title in a third weight class.
That's crazy. He's been undisputed too. People forget that. He beat Lomachenko. He beat a living legend. Like, I know, take what you will about that fight. A lot of people thought that he lost that fight. Regardless, it was a super close fight, and he edged Lomachenko, undisputed champion, three division world champion. That's big time stuff. That's Hall of Fame stuff. We're talking Hall of Fame for Devin Haney.
Oh, for sure.
Undisputed three division world champion, no question.
Who do you think Devin Haney fights next?
Good question. I don't know.
It's got to be Ryan Garcia.
That would make a lot of sense, especially if Ryan beats. But no, he's going to get the winner of Mario and Ryan. That makes sense. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I was too busy gloating on my pick to think about what's next for Devin.
It was a nice night of gloating last night. I went back and I found there's just so many jackasses out there on Twitter that we put our pick out. Me and Chris are riding with Haney. You got this guy going, I bookmarked this for inaccuracy. Bookmarking, screenshotting in this. Another guy said, you guys are going to have to discontinue your podcast.
Because of the pick?
Because of the pick.
Right.
Because of simply making a pick, which every talking head does. A-Rod, before the World Series, makes his pick.
No, but Dan, so, all right, so now if, let's switch it now. Okay, so because of the pick, if we were wrong, we should have to stop the podcast. Now do we just become the best podcast that's ever been?
Because we're right. We already are, dude.
I know we are, but like, does that jerk off now look at this and go, oh, well, I guess I should shut up. This is the best podcast. I should tune in and tell my friends.
I know we spent a lot of time on the trolls, but there were some really nice people last night, too. Some guy just tweeted at me and said, hey, I didn't know who you were before the fight, and now I do, and I'm going to be tuning into your show.
There you go. See, that's exactly what I'm saying. You know what?
For every troll out there, there's a decent guy out there. His name is Vic. I don't even know his name. I forgot it. Sorry.
Well, I'm gonna show some love to another podcast that's out there. It really is a show. Paul Imanagi and Tommy Raynone from Long Island, The Razor.
What's this, the Razor?
Yeah, The Razor. They have a betting show that they do together, and like so they'll do picks, and because Tommy's really really good at picking winners, and Tommy was over last night watching the fights with me, and I told him a month ago that Haney was gonna win the fight, and he was.
Who'd he have?
He had Norman by knockout. And I'm like, I'm telling you, dude, I think he's going to box his shoes off. And this was like 5-6 weeks ago. And he would literally text me every couple of weeks and be like, dude, you're still riding with Haney. You're just going to be so wrong. You still riding with Haney. You're going to be so wrong. And he sat next to me during the fight. And I was looking at him.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Come on, buddy.
Yeah, it's like sitting next to a Twitter guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, I had a troll sitting next to me watching
the fight. A friendly troll.
Yeah, he's a big friend. But yes, definitely a troll.
Yeah, it was that type of fight. I mean, they do get oddly personal boxing, these picks. People get so proud of being right, and they ride so hard, and they go way too far as to call him a coward, and it was crazy. And hey, we're right. Sometimes we're wrong. Listen, that's another thing, too, is like, I'm going to be wrong a lot. Yeah. I have no problem putting my picks out there. I don't see a lot of these other guys putting their picks out on Friday. I got no problem being wrong. We've been wrong numerous times. I'll be wrong again. There's no way I'm going 4-for-4 again.
100%.
Yeah, so
We've had a pretty good run. We had the I was looking at my DraftKings recent ledger? Yeah, my ledger of the recent months, and I had Crawford and Wardley and then Haney. I won money in all those fights. That's a good
money in the bank.
That's a good run.
Dude. I was 4-for-4 yesterday. I even had Benavidez. Remember I said I like 7 and 8?
Yeah.
Bro.
Boom.
I didn't put a dollar down on these bets. That's why I won, because I didn't put any money.
Yeah, down. Yeah. When you bet, you really just you really fuck.
Because I would have started messing with it. I would have started putting rounds. Like our picks were just straight up how they were going to, who was going to win, and how they were going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would have started messing with the parlay. I probably would have lost, but it's not what it's about. I'd rather be 4-for-4 and not win money.
Oh, is it time to talk about Benavidez yet? Now that you brought him up, I mean.
Yeah, let's go. David Benavidez stops Anthony Yard. We said he's the fucking mugger. And Chris, he fucking mugged him. People were tweeting at me, fucking mugger. I think it's going to catch on.
I hope David gets that. I hope it gets to David so he can see that. Because he's a funny guy. So he'll mugger. He'll appreciate that.
Dude, he literally held the head of Yard at one point and hit him with 18 punches in a row. He straight up mugged him. I think he took his – he pantsed him.
Yeah, he buddy-eared his wallet, his pockets for sure. He walked off with his Metro card.
he mugged Anthony Yard like Anthony Yard's never been mugged.
No, Anthony Yard walked out of that ring with his head down. That was a rough night.
I said David Benavidez's scariest performance of the night.
Yeah.
That was surgical. That was systematic. That was scary. And David Benavidez is that guy, man. He is now in another level, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And it's great to watch because he's been through so much. 28 years old. Mugs Anthony Yard. Stops him in the 8th round. slow start, because that's what we said too on the last episode, is he's a little bit of a slow start, but once he gets that engine going, it's a downhill locomotive. You can call him that too.
He builds. Once he gets that going. And we talked about it on the podcast last time, the way that he uses his jab. He builds off his jab, which a lot of fighters don't do. Like, Devin Haney doesn't build off his jab. He's not a combination puncher off his jab. He uses his jab to subdue you. Benavidez uses his jab to close distance and to get in range so he can throw combinations. And God, once he lets those combinations go, I mean, such fast hands for a big guy. And just relentlessly dominating head, body, up the middle, uppercuts, jabs, and just beats you down. And Anthony Yard, I was singing his praises leading up to this fight because I really like him and I think he's really fun and exciting. He was not fun and exciting that night. He just got his ass kicked from pillar to post.
Did he have a game plan? Because I feel like he did. I feel like he was just going to like, oh, I'll figure it out. It's like me in high school. Like, I'll figure it out. I'm not going to study.
He was completely shut off by the volume. But also, I hate to do this. I'm going like literally the opposite direction of what I did last podcast. Anthony Yard might be done at the high level. I didn't like the way he reacted to the resistance and the stress. It looked like he kind of folded. And he'd never done that before. Once you learn how to quit, once you learn how to fold, not saying you quit, but once you learn how to fold, you're pretty much done. At the highest level, if it's in there, the best guys will find it. And Benavidez found it, implanted it, and that's going to be there to stay.
Yeah, I think Yard will be a trivia question, sadly, down the lines. Like, hey, some of your favorite fighter that never won a world title? It's probably Anthony Yard. He lost at the highest level, so he lost to Benavidez, he lost to Beterbiev, he lost to Bivol. Lyndon Arthur too. Four losses. Yeah, 34 years old for York. Still made a lot of money. Had a great career. Made it to the tippy top. If it is the end for him, happy. I wish him all the best because he gave us some fun nights. But Benavidez is a fucking wrecking ball, man. I mean, 28 years old now. After the fight, he pulled a shocker because I thought, all right, we're gonna get questions about Canelo. We're gonna get questions about Bivol. We're gonna get questions about Beterbiev. He just straight up says, hey, May 2nd, I'm fighting Zerto Ramirez at cruiserweight. And I was literally like recording a video in the studio about Beterbiev and Bivol. I had to stop it. I was like, did he just say that? Is that happening? Is David Benavidez going up to cruiserweight to fight Zerto in May?
It's a huge fight. I like the fight. I wish he stayed at 75 longer because there's so many good fights for him. But I'm not mad. It's a great matchup. I think Zerto's awesome. I've been singing his praises for a while. I think he's a real problem. They have some similarities in terms of they're not big punchers, but they throw a lot. They're busy. Zerto was a fantastic body puncher. He's got an excellent jab. He's long. He's big. But everything we said about Benavidez still stands. Like, he's still got a great jab. He still is a crazy combination puncher. He's still relentless. Will Zerto Ramirez, being the bigger man, be able to maintain the output against a guy like that who's in your face the whole time? It's a good fight. It's a really good fight. And I think it'll sell. I think it'll do really good numbers. But again, I just wish we got a little more Benavidez at 75. He gets his first stoppage win at 75 and then immediately goes up. It's a bit of a shame. So, but at least he's going somewhere good.
Well, I don't know. Like, I'd have to watch some interviews today and the following week. Is Benavidez done at 175? Because this fight week, he told us that he would spend 5 years at 175, and we thought we'd get maybe both Beterbiev and Bivol to fight Benavidez because he's now aligned with Turkey, and these fights can all happen. So, is he done at 175? Because we know how hard it is for him to make the weight. There's a lot of things here. Did Benavidez decide to go to cruiserweight because he doesn't want to wait around anymore? This guy famously waited for Canelo Alvarez, goes up to 175, is now waiting around for Bivol and Beterbiev, who are dead set on fighting for a third time. Even though Turkey's not involved, they're on to a different billionaire to kind of stage that fight, maybe in Russia. So I kind of like Benavidez saying, you know what, I'm not waiting anymore. I'm going to create my own path. I'm going to go to cruiserweight. I'm going to take over this May date from Canelo. I think that has a lot of play in it, too. Mm. I'm going to be fighting on Cinco de Mayo weekend. I'm going to fight another Mexican. I'm going to put asses in seats at T-Mobile. I like the move. Yes, I would love to see Benavidez fight the guys at 175, Beterbiev and Bivol. But he can't sit around and wait anymore. It's his time. So you go ahead and fight the best guy at cruiserweight. Not named Jai Opataya. And that's another thing, too, is Benavidez could potentially fight Opataya, and that's straight-up warfare. Or why can't Beterbiev move up to cruiserweight? Well, he's getting up there in age. So let Benavidez now be the guy that these fighters chase, not the other way around.
I got an idea, Dan. I'm looking at this, that Benavidez is just becoming media savvy and understands the sport better and how to handle the attention. Because he also mentioned that the Canelo fight's not off the table. Did you hear that earlier in the week?
Wow, what weight is that going to be at?
So he's just throwing everything out there, and we've got everyone nibbling it up. He's being very smart. I say this all the time. I really like the way this guy moves. I like the way that he carries himself. I like what he says. I just think he's getting more savvy at dealing with us media members, that he's able to, you know, maybe I'll go this route. Maybe I'll go that route. Guess what? I have a deal with Zerto already set. I said, it's wild. Super, it's brilliant. He leads with a Canelo because, oh, everyone's going to look, oh, the Canelo fight, that's still a possibility. Wow. Ooh, I'm going to stay at 75 for 5 more years. Guess what? I already got a deal signed that I'm fighting Zerto May 2nd. So
love it.
Beautiful.
Switch it up, man. Mate, you're now the hunted. You know, you could still chase. You could still mention Canelo every single time. And you're never going to let that dream go. But come on. Canelo's now looking at Crawford. That was some news over the weekend that got buried because of this fight weekend, is that Canelo and Crawford look like they're negotiating for a second fight.
Interesting how that came out after the Eubank Ben decision, because I guarantee you Canelo was waiting for Eubank to win that fight and then make that fight over there for sure. Then he doesn't have a dance partner, and then there's also the monster looming, because Canelo doesn't want anything to do with David Benavidez. So now he's willing to go get his ass kicked again by Crawford to avoid David Benavidez. That's how much Canelo does not want to be even mentioned with Benavidez.
Yeah, he's going to make another 100, at least 80 million to fight Crawford again and maybe beat him. Who knows? That's a story for another day. But for Benavidez, that was a shocker. That he's going to fight Zerto at cruiserweight. He could potentially become a 3-division world champion. He could potentially on his way to heavyweight. Jim Lampley, are you listening, Jim?
Listen, Jim's been around a long time. Maybe he's crazy like a fox, man.
Well, I think he could do it. I think he'll try. I think he'll fight a heavyweight. Before David Benavidez hangs it up, he will have a heavyweight fight. Will he be as dominant as he is now? That remains to be seen. And I lean on your expertise there with the fact that he's just not a big puncher.
Yeah.
And you gotta keep these guys off of you at heavyweight. I'd love to see it, but main part of the story is that David Benavidez, the career is in his hands now. Like, that was a baller move last night. We're upset because he's not going to fight Bivol or Beterbiev, we don't think. But from a business standpoint, like, to hold all the cards like that, to pull a fat, like, that was pretty sick.
But he's bided his time. You know, he sat on the outside looking in for so long, and he was doing his homework. He was learning on the job. He was figuring the way this business works. And now he's in the driver's seat, like you said. And I think it's awesome. It's good for him. He's making money. He's made a lot of money. He's in the driver's seat. He's able to pick what he's going to do. He's telling us what he's going to do rather than being told what he's going to do. That's what you want to see with a guy like that. And he's got a star quality to him. I think he's a guy that could take over the sport by just fighting the baddest guys around and beating them. So I don't know. This is a fun time watching David Benavidez excel and rise.
I like that it's going to be in the U.S. Music to my ears.
We need U.S. stars. David's
Dude,
that.
T-Mobile, Cinco de Mayo weekend. I know it's always been Canelo. Before that, it was Floyd. Before that, it was Oscar. Last year wasn't the same having an OA fight on that Sunday night. Still fun. But give me a freaking 2 Mexicans going at it. A Cinco de Mayo weekend at T-Mobile. Fire me up. Let's get these fights. Let's shift these fights back to the U.S. Very small criticism last night, because we got an unbelievable card, and it's been now 2 years of this, where how long can we say, oh, I wish the fights were in the U.S.? But when Haney and Norman were making their way to the ring, I was like, man, imagine this main event in, like, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Imagine this main event at MGM Grand. Yeah, imagine Vegas. This main event at Barclays. Any pop in U.S. city, that fight week would have been sick. And that would have made fans – not the fight was – it was okay type of fight, but the lead-up would have made some fans. And that's the only knock, is that that fight – was on in the middle of the night in Saudi. It was kind of a dull atmosphere, but we got the fight. So I was very happy to hear that Benavidez will be fighting in the U.S. Ryan Garcia's next fight will be in the U.S. Shakur Teofimo will be think at MSG. So I think we're seeing a little bit of a shift back to the U.S. market. And I even saw Nikisa Badarian, the CEO of MVP. They initially pitched Jake versus Joshua. Turkey pitched it to Nikisa to go down in Saudi. And he's just like, I respectfully decline, because this fight belongs in the U.S. market or at Wembley.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why? That comes with a big why, because when you have guys that can actually sell here, do them here. When you have, you know, guys that are going to make something a huge event, do it there. Doesn't make sense to move it over there just because, you know, the money's there and Turkey said so. So I that's a good move by Nikisa to respectfully decline that deal, because they can do it anyway.
MB and Kisa, that's what everyone calls him, MB.
All right, let's go to Abdullah Mason. Abdullah Mason outlasts Sam Noakes. Best fight on the card. We have a new WBO lightweight champion, the youngest champion in all of boxing. 117, 111 twice, 115, 113, a rock'em sock'em robot type of affair that Abdullah Mason wins in the end. I think Sam Noakes made a lot of fans on Saturday night. Abdullah Mason took a lot of punishment, maybe too much punishment. Chris, where do you stand?
Yeah, I mean, fight was awesome. Sam Noakes is a hard man. Very, very tough. Very, very strong.
I said tougher than a $2 steak.
Yeah. He's a very, very tough dude. Abdullah went for it, man. Abdullah is the opposite of Devin Haney. That kid goes for it. He is trying to knock you out. And he's willing to get hit doing it. He's willing to put himself on the chopping block in order to get there. And I think we have the answer about Abdullah's chin. I think, you know, there were some questions about that because he has been down with a guy that was not at world-class level. Well, listen, he just fought a world-class level guy, guy who can really punch, and he stayed in the pocket, got hit, got hurt a few times, but recovered well and brought it back. He brought the pressure and the pain as well. He busted up Noakes. He had him cut over the eye. He's bleeding from his nose, had him hurt to the body, was close to the stoppage several times. But I think that's more speaking to Noakes' toughness than Abdullah's lack of finishing abilities, because I think he does have good finishing abilities. But I hate to see a guy like him, as talented as he is, as high of a ceiling as he has, with the potential that he has, to get hit so much. He got hit a lot. He got hurt to the body, got hit to the body, got hit to the head, he got rocked. Don't like seeing a young guy, 21 years old, taking that kind of damage when you really don't have to. You don't have to take those risks. I understand what you're trying to do. I understand you stole the show and you put on a great fight. But I would like to see him be a little more cautious and defensively sound, even if the fights aren't as exciting.
He hit Noakes more than Noakes hit him. But man, he took a lot of damage in this fight. And it's interesting because how do we grade Abdullah Mason? Do we grade him on a curve? Do we give him benefit of the doubt because he's 21 years old? Or do we look at him as a current champion and we should grade him like we grade other champions?
That one.
Hey, the second, the latter, right? Yeah.
As soon as it doesn't matter. You're a champion. You're not protected anymore. You're on the open market.
And that's how I looked at it. And that's how I immediately addressed it after the fight in my little post-fight video. Was like, I love this fight. Great performance, Abdullah. Congratulations. But man, you made that a lot harder than you had to. Man, if you're going to fight the elite, if you're going to get to the potential that we think you can reach, you got to shore up that defense. You're way too squared up, getting hit with shots that you shouldn't be getting hit with. That's the honest assessment that I had. It's like, dude, this guy is so good. So we're going to look at him. We're going to grade him differently. Like, I'm not going to say, oh, but he's only 21. Yeah, it was a great learning experience. And he was thrown into a title fight. And now he's learning on the fly as a champion. Right? It kind of reminds me of like a Jaime Munguia. Remember when he became champion real quick, almost like fell into a title. But he was still learning. I think that's the same thing with Abdullah Mason. So we're going to have all these expectations for him. And we're going to look at him to potentially carry the sport in a few years. So I think we have to grade him tough. I think we have to grade him a little bit harsher than others. But on the flip side of things, it's like we get upset when some fans get upset when they watch Devin Haney fight, or some fans get upset when the fight, quote unquote, running. Like, how much was that a storyline in back in May with these going to make a smaller ring? Turkey wants brawlers. Turkey pays a lot of money. That's what Eddie Hearn said after the fight. Turkey pays a lot of money. Like, stop. So we can't sit here and say, you know, we want these guys to engage. And then we have Abdullah Mason willing to stand and trade for our entertainment and kind of knock him there. But I think it's the first part, because I think we have to look at Mason and it's okay to say some things that he did wrong. It's okay to say this guy took too many shots. And if he's in there with a Schofield, or he's in there with a Murataya or an Andy Cruz, I mean, he might not come out of that. He might not come out of that fight with a W, because his defense it's got some holes in it. But I'll tell you this, it's going to be damn exciting.
Yeah.
Abdullah Mason fights are going to become must watch.
I mean, they already are, because he does go for it. Like I said, from the top, like he looks to not hit everyone out, and he has the ability to do it as well. So, but he's also an ever improving fighter. I've seen him take from, you know, when he got dropped in those fights, he made adjustments in his next fights. And, you know, I think that just goes to his discipline and the fact that they're always working on things in the gym. His team is probably going to agree with us that he got hit more than he needed to. And in the future, they're going to have to make adjustments so that doesn't happen. Maybe this is one of those situations where it's like, all right, we showed the world what we're about. We showed the world that we're tough. We showed the world that we got a chin. We showed the world that we're exciting. Now we can go back to being, you know, that other version of an elite level guy who's going to be the face of the sport coming soon. But who knows? So, you know, he obviously is not shy for getting into firefights. But it's going to be fun, like you said, while his career unfolds for what's next.
Yeah, I put out on Twitter, how would you rate Abdullah Mason's performance? Got a lot of comments. 4 out of 5, 7 out of 10, looks sharp, great footwork, good angles, not great because he got hit with a lot of shots. For a first title fight, I give him a 7 out of 10. He fights similar to Boots. Once he cleans the defense up, he's a top dog. Best fight of the night so far, as I expected, 9 out of 10. This guy says 9 out of 10, great job. Could have took the easy route and boxed on the outside, but decided to mix it up. A-, he was great. 9 out of 10. So pretty much the same sentiment here. Was he was an awesome performance, but we also know that you can't fight like this all the time. And I think that's what makes our listeners great, and people that watch boxing with the educated eye know that, like, you can't fight like this all the time, or you'll burn out. And we don't want Abdullah to burn out. I want Abdullah Mason to have a long, fruitful career. So we're in 10 years, Chris, when we're old men, we're heading to Vegas for an Abdullah Mason main event. We're going to bed at 8 p.m. because we're old. We're not partying.
I'm going to
get up early.
I'm going to bed at 9 now, so I'm not that far off. So.
7.
Yeah, it'll be 7 by then. In 10 years.
Light's still out. Light's still on.
I'm turning in, guys. Hey, Chris, you want to get dinner? No, it's bedtime. I got to go.
Now we got Abdullah Mason versus, I don't even know, Kermel Mouton's son.
That's funny.
And we're brought to you by PPV.com. Yeah, I don't know. It was a good performance. All in all, good performance. We can't criticize it too much because it was so entertaining. And like like you said, Chris, he showed that chin.
Yeah.
Are we going to doubt? Yeah, he gets hit a lot, but damn, this guy's got an amazing chin. So you might be able to take shots from a Schofield, who I think is one of the hardest punchers there, or a Murataya. I'm looking at the lightweight picture now, and it's ever-changing. We got Shakur, WBC champ, but he's fighting at 140 next. We got Gervonta, WBA. I don't know if he'll ever fight again. We got Raymond Murataya, the IBF champion, who's fighting Andy Cruz
in
January. And then we got Abdullah Mason, champ at WBO. It's a fun division. A lot of moving parts.
A lot of young guys, too. I like that.
Cruz, like you said last week, Mason wants to rule lightweight.
Mm-hmm. He's going to have to go through
that for the taking.
He's got a bunch of heads to collect because, Andy Cruz is a problem, man. That's a tough fight for everybody.
You think Cruz is going to beat Murataya?
I do.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's like a... That's another
and that's not a knock on Murataya. I think Murataya is really good. It's just I think Andy Cruz is a nightmare.
Beast. Last fight we're going to talk about was Bam Rodriguez. Good gracious. I thought this was the best performance of the night. He stops Puma Martinez in 10. I tweeted that Bam is so good it's almost boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
I started doing the dishes because I started loading my dishwasher. In the fourth round,
no one stands a chance. Like I say it all the time, and more every time I watch him, it's the same thing. He's like AI. He just builds. He's collecting data. You know, I thought he lost the first round. He's collecting data, and then once he gets going, it is over. You got nothing for him. It's amazing to watch. It's a beautiful symphony of violence, and he's just picking guys apart, making a miss. Offense and defense so seamless. The reason I call it like AI is because if you are going to script a fight, if you are going to script what you do when that guy does this, it's Bam Rodriguez. Everything is textbook the way it's supposed to be.
It's unreal. I mean, he landed 47% of his power while limiting Martinez to just 25% total punches.
the broadcast about fourth round turned into a podcast where they were talking about a potential fight with Inoue. Will he move up to 118 or will he try to get that fourth belt at 115? The angles and it's just how he's beating him too, Chris. It's like what I like about Bam is he could have easily coasted to that decision win, but he knocked him out and he left no doubt. And he's now stopped four straight quality opponents. Stopped them, not just beat them. Like, we talk about the scalps that he's collecting. You know, Puma's not the top scalp, but he's still an undefeated champion. And he made him look pedestrian. Like, he was toying with him at moments. He's so good that it almost gets overlooked. The fact that we're talking about it, the 40 in this part of the show, just says everything. Because he almost has to get in there in a way. Like, there's no one really left at 118, no offense to 115, excuse me. No offense to Willie Baldo Perez, who has the IBF strap. He's fighting Taraji in December on that Saudi card that Inoue and Nakatani are on. So maybe Bam sticks around and gets that one, becomes undisputed at 115. And then there's not really much at 118 in terms of marketable fights, or definitely not in terms of competitive fights. And then there's 122 pounds, Chris. Inoue, Nakatani. Could you imagine Bam Rodriguez versus Inoue at 122?
I can, and I would not be that surprised. I feel like that's going to happen at some point because there just is no more competition for this guy. He's mowing everybody down. I thought this could be actually a competitive fight, you know, many months ago when they were talking about this, like, Puma's a really tough guy. And he showed that in the first round. He was awkward. He was strong. He was landing some good shots. It looked like he actually, you know, bothered Rodriguez, Bam, early on in round one. But after that, it was just like total domination and just broke him. In terms of ability, in terms of psychology, broke his spirit, and just completely dominated. So he's one of those guys who's so good. You're always just going to have to go, well, he's got to move up. Well, he's got to fight this guy. Well, he's got to you got to
Roy Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. In order to get competitive fights, you're going to have to like essentially put him in weight classes. He doesn't belong because he's just that good.
Is he not big enough for how tall is he?
Not very tall.
Well, Inoue is not that tall either.
No.
So if you were Bam Rodriguez's manager, what would you? How would you move him? Would you have him fight one more at 115? Get that become undisputed. So you got that. And then what? Do you have one fight at 118 and wait for Inoue Nakatani, or do you just go right to 122, apply pressure there, take on someone at 122?
I would say just go right to 22. But again, it's going to be up to him because I don't think he cares. Whatever. Yeah. He's just like, hey, he shows up. He's like, oh, I'm fighting this guy here. Okay, cool.
He's like, oh, I'm having my first kid. My girlfriend's in labor. Huh.
Yeah, cool.
So that's interesting. Inoue's 5'5", Rodriguez 5'4". This is according to BoxRec. That could be wrong. I don't know. I think we're on a crash course. I think Inoue and Nakatani are going to fight next year. Nakatani could beat Inoue.
Very, very possible.
It could be Nakatani and Bam, which I'm pretty excited for. I know, does Bam have the same manager or something up there? There's some type of, that doesn't matter. It's not a roadblock when there's millions and millions on the line. I'm excited about Bam. I'm excited about, he has two worthy opponents down the line. Whether it's Nakatani or whether it's Inoue. If Inoue beats Nakatani, I think it's almost inevitable, Bam versus Inoue.
I think it'll be fun in the meantime too. While he just keeps mowing guys down, doesn't matter who they are. He's built for super fights. That's all there is to it.
I hope he gets the credit because he's so good that it's like Aaron Judge. You get greatness fatigue. Like Aaron Judge just won his third MVP, and it was actually
I don't need to watch him. He's going to win. I know.
Right?
Yeah.
It was like he has one of the greatest seasons ever, Judge, but people are doubting his MVP candidacy because some catcher hit 60 home runs. Like with Bam, it's like he's so good. He's put on this card with all these other great fighters. He's almost like overlooked. I thought he had the best performance. It was scary how good he is.
But also, Dan, he's so fun to watch. So it's not like it's not like he's going out there and just like ho-humming through it and like getting decisions. Like he's performing moves that you're like, whoa, did you see that? And then he gets stoppages of really good fighters. So I don't think we have that concern. Like the greatness fatigue is going to set in because he is still fun to watch.
So how would you rate Ring 4, the Night of Champions, 1 through 10?
Awesome card. What would be my criteria? So 10 would be what?
Like the Don King card from
Rumble in the Jungle? Like, you know, what level? I would rate it very high.
I'd give anything a 10.
I thought, yeah, nothing's a 10, but this is I'll say this, best card in recent memory. As far back as I can remember, this is the best card that I've seen. And it was good fighters, important fights that mattered, and they were fun. You know, Bam looked amazing, got the stoppage. Abdullah Mason was in a fantastic fight, winning his first world title. Devin Haney upsetting the odds and going out there and putting on a clinic. And then David Benavidez making your jaw drop and go, God damn, this guy's tough. I expected that fight to be better. So that maybe that could be the knock.
Right.
But all in all, the card was excellent.
I give it like an 8.2 only because two of the fights, one of the fights was a little dull, the Haney fight, but it meant so much. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones were just so, like, Bam is so good that he made it boring. And Benavidez is so powerful that he made it one-sided. And the best fight was Noakes and Abdullah. I love that they started off the show. And I will say this, the pacing of it was excellent.
Very good. Yes.
Good. They did it. Wait, it was too fast.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, guys, can we take a second and make a breather? Like, I want to make some food. I want to step out for a second. They were moving that thing. They did their little talking head segments. And they kept those brief. My man Malik Scott had a very, very weird night. Did you catch some of the things he was saying?
Not really. I don't listen to the talking heads much during fights. I just watch the fights.
Yeah. So Malik Scott, they bring Conor Benn up to the stage, and it's Malik Scott. It's Kate Scott, and they're married. I don't know if anyone knows that. Kate Abdo is now Kate Scott. She's married to Malik. So that's an interesting dynamic. A married couple up there. Then Conor Benn comes up, and Conor Benn says, talking about his fight with Eubank. And Malik Scott, unprovoked, goes, I watched your fight with Eubank, the second fight, 20 times in the last week. And even Conor Benn was like, really? Like 20 times. And I film studied it 15 times. So I was like, wait, why did he say that? And our guy Rob Tebbit, who's hilarious, did the math. So that means that Malik Scott watched Eubank Benn 2, which was not really that competitive of a fight. 3 times a day, 1 hour sessions each for an entire week.
That's 20 hours. That's 20 hours, dude. That's an entire day of watching one fight that wasn't particularly good.
Why did he say that? Listen, we're broadcasters. We've been live. We say dumb. Sometimes you say something and you think in your head, like, why did I say
that? Why did I just say that?
Why did he say that?
To show Ben that he cares? I don't know.
He also said Ben can go up higher than 160, which I thought was not as crazy as the 20 times.
But he was just on full glaze mode, huh? Just
he was, as the kids say, he was pouring the glaze on. And then before the Norman fight, we're picking on Malik Scott here. Before the Norman fight, he says that Brian Norman has the fighting spirit of Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And I lost my mind. I got mad at that.
I lost my mind.
I threw my slippers down. Malik, that's too much. It's too much, man.
Guys, you're broadcasting
too thick.
Broadcasting is not easy. It's so hard. You see guys like Dan and I, and we're up there and we're talking on live TV. It's not easy. It's not for everyone. You definitely can get better at it, but you either got it or you don't. And some people
it's
do
so
not.
Hard. I don't know if people understand how hard it
now
is.
People don't get it at all.
I'm not complaining because it's the most fun, exciting job in the world calling a live fight. But it is freaking hard. You're on for 5 hours, and you have to think about every word, and you have to be excited, but not too excited. You can't be too quiet, but you have to be somewhere in the middle. You can't say a ridiculous line because now Twitter exists, and you're going to get absolutely torched.
And you can't curse. It's really hard not to curse.
Can't curse.
Can't curse.
Everyone out there is very quick to criticize the broadcast teams, and it's really hard. It's very hard, very hard gig, and Malik Scott will learn. I mean, he's a student of the game. 20 times. Watch that 20. Rob Tebbit, this guy, got to go to his Twitter. It was one of the funniest things ever. He couldn't get over that. He was putting out memes. You know that meme where the there's a guy holding open the eyes of this woman. I think it's from a movie. And it said Malik Scott, Malik and Kate Scott on their 20th rewatch of Ben Eubank.
Yeah, we all want to be on that stage, but you got to deal with that kind of stuff too when you mess up.
Yeah, absolutely. Great fight week, great fight coverage. I'm congratulating ourselves. I think we really brought it this week, giving you guys all sorts of content, and we'll be back later in the week because it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
we won't have a show.
Yeah, there's not really much going on, right?
I want to see my family. I want to make some turkey. What goes on at the Algeria house? I know you're a food guy. Like, do you deep fry? We've probably had this conversation. Do you deep fry the turkey?
No, no. But I do make two turkeys at a time because we have a big family. I cook birds. I do the birds. I do the sweet potatoes. I do the Brussels. And then my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, although she's Haitian, she is a phenomenal Italian cook. And she makes awesome lasagna that is like – but I mean, it's just dense. It is so dense. She does such a good job, painstakingly for days, preparing that lasagna.
She put meat in it?
Yes. Yeah. Ton of meat.
It's got to have that.
Pounds of ground beef. It's really, really good.
Two turkeys and lasagna?
Two turkeys, lasagna, meatballs.
Pasta.
Because we're Italian, pasta. Sweet potatoes, Brussels, every kind of potato possible, everything. It's just a smorgasbord of delicious eats, and we have a lot of, man, my house is big, a lot of people.
You're going to be in New York?
No, I'm actually going to be down here, so that's going to be, it's going to be a hybrid this year, a little different than usual. I spent too much time in the Northeast when I was working on this
movie. Yeah, I was going to say, you know where you're coming back and forth. So in the latest on the movie, before we say goodbye.
My last day is tomorrow. I'm going up. I'm going back up today.
Rap day.
Well, for me, because there's no more fights. I'm the fight choreographer. So there's fight choreographer. So if there's not fights, I don't need to be there. So if I don't need to be there, I'm going to go home because it's getting cold in Jersey. So my last day is tomorrow.
What a saga.
Yeah, it's been tremendous. We had our last fight was last week. It was super, super intense. Last week was insane. 10, 12 hour days, 5 days a week. Just constantly working choreo with the actors. Making sure that they're staying sharp and not going to hurt each other, checking the camera angles, make sure that the punches are quote unquote landing and not missing. Interesting gig. Happy that it's over or it's coming to an end because I'm tired and it's been a long
time. I'm happy it's over because Chris is not looking for a pat on the back here, but this guy has been flying back and forth from New York to Florida for the last 3 months. Albeit to be on a movie set. So it's like, it's a Chris Algieri lifestyle. But it's a lot. You do this, you do pro box, you call fights, you're on a movie set. So this guy works. My guy works. Chris Algieri is a fucking worker, guys.
The production guys that handle all like the setups and the builds for fights, you know, for Top Rank, for pro box, for DAZN, whatever. It's a lot of the same crews. And they're all kind of working behind the scenes. The guys you never see who build out the sets. And one of my buddies, I kept seeing him like multiple weekends in a row. And he's like, "You work in this show too? You work in this?" He's like, "Yo, you know what your name is? All the checks." He's like, "Cause you be cashing all the checks." I'm like, "If there's checks, I'm going."
Collegiate. Yeah. Way better nickname than the Fighting Collegian. Chris Cashing Checks Algieri.
Chris All the Checks Algieri. That's
I love that.
That's a much better name.
And lastly, before we say goodbye, shout out to Dame Lillard, my guy. I chatted with him yesterday. NBA. Oh, nice.
He's a big fight fan.
Huge fight fan. He got all his picks correct.
Knows his stuff.
Yeah, I posted it. I always say, "Hey, bro." I always ask him to come on the show, and he's like, he respectfully says, "Like, no." He came on once a few years ago. It was a great interview. But now I don't even ask him to come on the show anymore. I just ask for his picks, and I say, "Hey, can I post this?" And he says, "Yes." So those DMs that I posted are with his permission, and he was correct. He was spot on.
Not only just correct, even just everything about what he said was right on the money. That guy really knows his boxing.
He loves, but he boxes himself and trains. That guy knows his shit. Maybe we'll get him on at some point. All right, everyone, have a great Thanksgiving. We won't have an episode of Making the Executive Decision right now. We'll be back next Monday to preview our San Antonio card and for PPV.com. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We're very thankful for you, our listeners. Goodbye.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.